Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Sologi. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so this is for February 7th, 2026, and I am officially 40 years old now. Yeah, and I'm still not entirely sure how I'm going to interpret that, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Anyway, among the stuff we will be discussing this week, there's the story of President Trump going on his official Truth Social account and posting something that was really, really racist before he apparently wised up and deleted it before the end of the week. We also have a spending package that was finally approved by the House of Representatives. SCOTUS made a huge decision on California's new congressional map. And we also, as always, have all the entertainment-related stories, including some trailers, some announcements, and a Grammy win that made history. But before we do all of that, before we go there, we're going to start off, as we always do, as is tradition, by going through all the things we've been doing this week. And it's also a tradition, we start with Chris. So, Chris, tell us what you've been doing this week.
Yeah. I've been having a relaxing week for once. I used some vacation time to have a break for this weekend to get away from work and all that, which has been nice, especially for how cold it is. We had like an extra inch of snow yesterday for all that. Looks like we're still going to be under freezing until maybe Tuesday. We'll get above freezing for the first time in probably 3 or 4 weeks, maybe, which will be nice, and maybe start the process of melting some of the snow, though we end up with the same issues we have currently, where it's, you know, when it's sunny out, that's enough to start melting some snow, but it's cold enough that as soon as that sun goes away, it starts to freeze up and turn into ice, and that's very annoying to have around all the place, so that's still been a big issue, so we'll see how that goes, but yeah, like right now it's 7 degrees. That's been fun to deal with. But yeah, like you, I had my birthday yesterday. Went out with my parents and some other family to go out and eat, which is pretty fun. But I feel like it's been long enough since I've ate at any sort of fancy restaurant. It's just more of a normal restaurant that they have, you know, essentially a phone there to do like trivia stuff or whatever game stuff if you need entertainment that way. That's a weird thing that's that place does, and they have ads on all the lights. You know, the light above every table. They have like a little billboard ad next to it. I was like, that's a sad place that we're in, that they have to put ads in the restaurant for things that are not, you know, things you can get at the restaurant. So that's just a wild place to be. And yeah, being a Friday night thing, it was very busy. So that was kind of adding to all of it. So yeah, had a nice one. But yeah, for things I've been doing outside of that, I watched the new Muppet Show, the special that they did with Sabrina Carpenter being sort of the main guest, though they had a few other people that were doing some things, like Maya Rudolph was sort of hanging out in the crowd before she is unexpectedly killed in a funny way, but then comes back to life when something else happens to her. And yeah, Seth Rogen was also there because he's producing the whole thing, but he gets fired, essentially, because they're like, oh, we don't have, we have to get rid of somebody, and they're like, oh, why don't you let yourself go, because you're used to it as a producer. I got a fun way to do that. So yeah, he ends up crumbling at a certain point, but Sabrina was sort of the main main guest who gets to do a couple performances, sings Manchild, and a fun little bit involving the chicken Muppets. Well, she gets to sing in a boat with Kermit, sing this song. I forget what the song is. It's a cover they were doing. But then Miss Piggy is mad that she's getting her performance cut. So she kicks him out of the boat and takes over. There's some very good bits throughout. So yeah, they do a good job of adapting a lot of the fun parts of the original Muppet Show for a more modern sensibility.
And yeah.
Yeah. Made a very good show. So hopefully they get to do more.
I hope so.
That's on Disney Plus for people who want to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been watching Conan, the anime. Or Detective Conan, I guess. That's Netflix
also known as Case Closed over here.
Well, not anymore.
Yeah. Not anymore, but it used to be.
Yeah. They got a bunch of episodes up on Netflix. And by a bunch, I mean probably like 20 or so. I'm watching the first set of them, which is, you know, the intro to the show, and then dealing with the company that, you know, turns Shinichiro into a little boy when they poison him. And then one of the higher ups at the company ends up getting on their bad side, and she ends up taking the poison and also shrinks and becomes part of Conan's friend group, and they deal with a lot of drama as a result of that. She has the fear that the company's coming back for her. Doing all that kind of fun stuff. So yeah, that's been fun to watch. Unless you want some more classic anime stuff that still holds up. But yeah, there's that. I also watched Groundhog Day a couple times.
Oh yeah, that's
how you got to do it.
Plus, it's a classic, so
yeah. And it's great to kind of look at more aspects of it that you missed the first time or previous times.
Oh yeah,
and it's like there's a lot going on there. They layer on a lot of stuff, and it's got to be a hard thing to make. Because you're filming a lot of the same scenes over and over again, but for them to be placed in different points in time in the movie and all that. So I still think my favorite character of all is Stephen Tobolowsky's character, Ned Ryerson. He's just a great part of that, because he gets to be kind of the early comedic foil for Bill Murray's character. Gets knocked out at a certain point and all that, and ends up becoming their buddy as Bill's character, you know, signs up for all the insurance stuff that he has to offer and all that. So yeah, an interesting thing I didn't find out until this year is that the young couple that's about to get married and then goes through with it, the guy there is Michael Shannon.
Yep.
Very young Michael Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool, because you definitely don't recognize him, because he's not...
Nope.
The older form that you've probably noticed him in the last, like, 20 years.
Yeah.
With his very specific look, he just looks like a young guy.
Mm-hmm.
There. And one of the drunks, if you've watched Die Hard, one of the drunks is the guy that's in the sewer. Like, oh, I can't call in to shut down the whole block kind of thing. It's like, well, he got his life together. Went to LA and ends up being part of a terrorist plot. You know, that's a fun time. But yeah, for what I've been playing, I jumped back into Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Not for really any particular reason. I just was like looking at things to play on my PlayStation Portal. I went to bed and I played about an hour of that, which was pretty easy because it was just a lot of early game stuff, so a lot of walking around and watching cutscenes and doing some fighting here and there. But now I'm at the point I downloaded it on my PS5 because I had some room for that. Decided to play some more of that. And mostly what I've been doing is ignoring the main story stuff. Kind of just running around because on the map they highlight, like in each territory they show a meter of how much of the wealth and mysteries and something else that you get in these different sections of the map. So I've just been going around and trying to find all that. And getting the view sync points to clear out or open up more of the map for that. So, yeah, nothing really too complicated there, but enjoying that. I don't know how much more I'm going to put any time into that right now, but that's been one I've been jumping into. And the other one, it's been American Truck Simulator. Because I am working on finishing up the Louisiana event they have going on. I think I have two more jobs to do, deliver to two of the remaining cities, and then from there that'll be it. But yeah, that game still a lot of fun, and Louisiana has a lot of fun stuff. I've taken the ferry a couple times on jobs because that's the kind of place that is. We get a few businesses that are sort of on the other sides of some of these rivers, so you have to kind of take a ferry across and all that, so. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, as far as like gaming is concerned, obviously I'm still doing on my my Switch 2, so I'm still playing Splatoon 3 pretty much every night to online, and absolutely adoring it. Obviously, still. And I'm getting, very slowly, I am getting, a lot better at it. But, like I've said in the past, a lot of whether you're going to win a match or not is kind of predetermined by the fact that you and your team have the right equipment for the job, and that, they also kind of know what they're doing. But, it's a toss-up. But, I have no complaints, really, right now. And I'm really enjoying it still. We're supposed to have I was trying to find out when the next Splatfest is going to be, but the last one, of course, was last month in January. Trying to find out, I want to know when the next one's going to be, but so still playing that. I'm also still playing Donkey Kong Country 2. I actually beat the main part of the first part of the game, but it's not, you haven't really beat it at that point. You still got, you've beat the main game, but there's still the hidden other part of the game that you still have to do, where you have to collect the Kremlin coins to get to the Lost World stages, beat those, and then beat K. Rool a second time. Then you've actually beaten the game, but that, involves going back and searching through stages and all that stuff to try and get that stuff. But still a lot of, still very fun, still hard as all hell. But probably the main thing I've been playing the last couple of days is I finally got a copy of Trails Beyond the Horizon. And that game is really good, but the prologue feels like it takes forever because it's trying to, reestablish all these other characters that haven't really been a major part of the game that part of the game for the last couple of releases. Like Rufus, for example, Reen Schwarzer is back, Crow, a lot of the characters from the Erebonia arc sort of making their reappearance, and also, Kevin, of course, making his grand reentrance into the game, after his, his sort of most time in the Liberal arc and everything. But yeah, he, and basically how the game starts is, Van and, I think it's Fira and his former master are invited to test out this this like AR battle simulator in this huge dedicated facility that's somewhere, I can't remember where it's at. I don't think it's in Liberal. I don't think it's in the Republic. But they go there, and it's made by Marduk, which are the, they come up a couple of times in the last two entries. And essentially, they're there because for two reasons. One is they are trying to use data to try and test out this new, AR tech. The other is because Calvard has now launched a space program, and while they are in the Marduk building, because Marduk has decided to ally itself with the Septian Church to start, for technological reasons, the Republic ends up like prematurely doing a secondary like test launch before phase three begins, and they do manned space flight. And it's kind of suspected that the reason they brought all of them there is because they wanted them to see this and sort of gloat about it. But there's clearly some other weird shit that's going on underneath it. But yes, I finished the prologue. The other major part of the game, I'm on the first part now, which means, we're back in Edith doing, the various jobs that, Van does and all that. But it's nice to be back in Zemuria after a while. I love that series, as pretty much everybody at Smashpad does, and I will always go to bat for it. But other than that, just, reading books, nothing new about that. And oh yeah, also one of the things I got for my birthday was I got a brand new TV, a 42-inch HD TV that's gonna go up in my bedroom sometime, if not this weekend, then this week, something like that. But yeah, so I've got that. Yeah, that's pretty much what everything I've got. So is there anything you want to add before we move on? No? Okay then. In that case, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And over the last few shows we've been doing this sort of little series about Z-grade bad obscure fighting games. Ones that you might have heard of or been familiar with if you were around in the 90s, or if you were, just in the fighting game scene. But if you're around now, or if you're, not young, not old enough to remember all of that, it's going to be obscure to you. And we're going to do one more of those this week. And it's going to be kind of short because the actual like story and history behind this game is kind of it's a little it's sort of up in the air, but it's infamous for being just one of the absolute dog shit tier fighting games ever created. Now, to be completely fair, this game was made by a couple of by like a Like two or three like really ambitious teenagers who just wanted to make a game that they thought would be neat. So I can't totally fault them for it. And when you look at like the overall design of this game, it's very obvious that this was like an amateur, very much an amateur creation. But even so, like it's still very awful. The game is called Brutal Battle, the quest for Talis Ra, and they spelled Brutal Battle with D's instead of T's. It was created by a small, very obscure, like little, like two, three person studio called Sandbird Software, who only made one other game, which was a two-player battle game called Outlaw 1997. And it was an unlike Brutal Battle, this game was basically like a joke. And it was Brutal Battle was essentially, like I said, it was made by a bunch of teenagers. It's obviously very, very very crude. It was created, most of the game's design and programming was done by John T. Schwartz. The character sequencing and I'm guessing photography was done by Gary Hausman. And the music was done by Aaron J. Greer. And Aaron J. Greer, funny enough, he actually had done like real stuff in the past. He did some of the music and programming for Star Control 2 back in the day. And the game itself, like it came out in 1994, and it was one of those games that was based around the shareware model, because this was a DOS game, just like Doom or all those older, if you remember the older PC games before the rise of the internet, essentially these were games there that would go on like either like compilation discs or they could be downloaded via Usenet and shared around on Usenet. Usually the version that you got in the shareware was very much limited, sort of incomplete version of the game. And what would happen is if you liked what you saw, you could then buy like the entire game. The way that this worked with Brutal Battle is that if you got the shareware version, there were only three fighting characters available for the player. If you got a later version, it would come with five. The full official version that you could purchase had eight characters in all. And essentially, what the sort of story for this game was, of like its backstory, a surprisingly not terrible one, but also still very derivative of the era. Basically, it goes by this idea that in the year 2023, which remember this was like in the early 90s, so it was still a ways away, in a laboratory in Los Alamos, New Mexico, a Dr. Chen found a way to punch holes in the fabric of space-time. And he does this several times that gets him that is very successful, but on his first attempt to make a hole through to the distant future, a cyborg named Talus Ra comes through the hole, kills Dr. Chen, and then steals the equipment. Now, apparently, for whatever reason, all of the various areas that in time that Dr. Chen managed to have access had these various like guardians on the other side to protect and keep the time stream stable. And if you play the game, you end up choosing one of these guardians, try to battle through all the holes in space-time, and eventually get to Talus Ra and defeat him. That's essentially the game. And the actual like characters for one of the things I also have to point out first is this game's presentation. Outside of like the menu screen, which is fairly competent. The rest of it is entirely in Comic Sans. It looks like mid like 1996 era web 1.0. It's kind of funny, and and what's funny is that like it every time you go to like a new level or whatever, you'll get this like very crudely created screen that's meant to suggest like the time period you went to. So like for example, you go to Rome, Italy, 412 AD. It'll be like in this sort of odd sort of cursive, or you go to Chicago, Illinois, 1996, and it's this like this solid brick sort of font with like blood and bullet hole stains on it, stuff like that. So it's very crude. And then of course there's the actual characters. Now if you got the shareware version, which is pretty much like what most of the people who played this game remember, you essentially only got three characters that you could fight against. These included a Roman centurion by the name of Brutus, again with the name D on it, and you fought him again in ancient Rome, but their version of ancient Rome and is like this really awful rendered, like even by 1994 standards, very crude of like a vague sort of circle with, you know, stone arch circle with like Roman columns on it that just seems to be out in the middle of nowhere. And it's just, it's really dumb. Or there's another character who is a, like a, I think, I'm pretty sure she's supposed to be like a belly dancer of some sort from Budapest in Hungary. And she is like, it's again, you know, early 90s fighting game. She's barely wearing anything. And then there's the guy from Chicago who is this, this dude who's like wearing white baggy pants, has a pair of, you know, boxing gloves and a backwards white cap on his head, and he's fighting in front of like this just solid brick wall with like the most crude looking MS Paint graffiti on it. And that would be it. If that was the shareware version, that was the version that you played. And if you managed to get all of them, if you managed to fight all of them, your reward was a essentially like a score screen where you could enter your name, where you're declared the most brutal. And what would happen is, I'm guessing that would then send you off to the creators at Sandbird, who could then like give you the ideas like, this is the game, you know, like this is what the whole game actually looks like. And that's basically Brutal Battle. If I sort of sound like I'm not saying a lot, or if like it doesn't seem like a whole lot, that's because it is impossible to convey just how awful this game looks in words. You have to actually like go on YouTube and find videos of people playing it just to see how awful it is. Basically, the quote unquote animation that is in this game is, it's literally like they just took, you know, photographs of these people in like, you know, static poses, and then just sort of sequence them so like the animation is like extremely choppy. The actual soundtrack is notorious because of the fact that it's the same like vaguely generic techno track over all three stages, and that vague techno track has like little bits and pieces from like Ava Nagila and, you know, the Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and all this stuff in it. And again, the stages, I don't think I can really convey in words just how awful they look. Like, even by early 90s standards, this was like, you know how like when like with like vaporwave was like a thing for a while, and you would see like those graphics on like vaporwave albums and YouTube videos and stuff of like these really sort of cheesy looking computer graphics. Those look advanced compared to what this game shows. I'm not joking. But yeah, that's Brutal Battle, The Quest for Talus Ra, arguably the worst fighting game ever produced, but is weirdly obscure at the same time and kind of needs to like be talked about more because it's just it's covered in mystery like a lot of those old shareware games are. And again, if you really want to know what I'm talking about, go and watch on YouTube. You will find a couple of videos of people playing this game, and it is awful. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Okay, so with that, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week comes from President Trump, who decided to, he, or as he's claiming, one of his aides, posted a video on his Truth Social account Thursday that features both President and First Lady Obama as gorillas in a jungle before they then decided to delete it on Friday.
Yeah, this is just one of the things that reminds you of how racist Trump is. For the people that have, paid attention to other things he's been doing for a while now. So he posted this video that was about him being the king of the jungle with various Democrats as various animals. And of course, as you would expect, when he gets to the Obamas, that they make sure that they are one of the primates and ends up being gorillas. And that's, you know, a sign of how racist this whole thing is.
Yeah.
Ended up going through a number of responses from the Trump administration where Carolyn Leavitt's trying to make it out to be just a harmless, you know, Lion King meme video.
Yeah.
That's, and people are like, it's not even focusing on the right kinds of animals for that.
Yeah.
Much less it's in a jungle, which the Lion King takes place in a savanna.
Yeah.
And so that fell apart, and then they're like, oh, it was an aide that was, where, you know, a staffer that posted it to his account and all that, which contradicts Trump claiming that he and, I think, one of his other men people, Dan Bovino or something like that, I forget what the guy's name was, but like that those two were the only ones that posted to his account.
Yeah.
And then they just deleted it after it started breaking containment from the usual political sphere into the wider pop culture stuff.
Which, I mean, it was inevitably going to do. Like,
yeah, it's just not going to contain it when it's this racist. And, yeah, even got, you know, people like Tim Scott to post about how not happy he is about this.
Yeah.
It was like, when you get him mad about racism, then it's definitely broken containment. They tweeted out praying it was fake because it's the most racist thing I've seen out of this White House.
Yeah.
I was like, boy, that's a thing there. Praying it's fake. Like, what fake about it? Like that it didn't happen?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of a wild situation, and yeah, has kind of brought that up to forefront for the time being.
Yeah,
obviously if this was done by any other president, they would have been, you know, hauled in to be impeached and whatnot, or expected to resign and all that. And it's just, it's a Thursday for him.
Yeah. But so yeah, that happened. And oh yeah, for those who don't know, the Winter Olympics started this week, and Vice President J.D. Vance went there, and he got roundly booed by just about everybody in there. Yeah. In the stadium. Yep.
Yeah, they switched the feed to J.D. Vance and his wife, and a bunch of boos started coming in, mixed in with cheers, because people aren't, you know, cheering for whatever TV is doing.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, but a lot of boos once they started highlighting J.D. Vance, which is good to see. Make sure not let him have a moment of peace, though he's going to get peace just fine, because he can come and go wherever he wants, and as a VIP, he'll get jeopardied around outside of the general audience that is there in Milan.
So yeah.
I think he was at the hockey game they just won. The U.S. one, so with Jake Paul, I think it was. So great crowd he's keeping.
Yeah. So that's happened, and then we found out this week that Jeff Bezos has had the Washington Post lay off a third of its staff, including its sports section, several foreign bureaus, and its books coverage.
Yeah, just a huge swath of the Washington Post is gone now.
Yeah.
Especially like the sports section, that was one of its highlights. Much of its foreign coverage is also gone, which is also, you know, one of their crown jewels. There's a lot of their foreign coverage of all that stuff through pretty much every part of the paper experiencing layoffs. Especially like the book review stuff is basically going to be gone. And yeah, good time to be doing this, that because people were about to fly over to Italy for the Winter Olympics there, and they cut them just in time so they didn't waste their time over there. And yeah, the just seems like Bezos no longer cares about having this as sort of a pride of the things he owns, like he used to back like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Since he's pretty much gone all in on corruption, bribing the federal government, making a movie for Melania mm-hmm. that nobody likes. And all that it seems like, unless he decides to sell it off, that this is going to be a slow death for the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. It seems like the department that got that suffered no cuts was sort of the American, U.S. political coverage.
Yeah.
We were like, oh, that means he still cares about it. It's like, no, they don't. They very much pushed for more of a conservative focus on a lot of their coverage and all that. I don't expect they're going to be having a great time there. And so much so that the guy that was the CEO of the paper has left as well. Which is fun. So, yeah. A great time for these kind of institutions is if Bezos fucks around, causes people to unsubscribe for obvious reasons, and then makes further cuts to cement that they're not going to support them in the future. So, nice little cycle there. So, there you go.
Yeah, but we do have a hero of the week to wash that awful, awful taste out of our mouths. A federal judge has blocked the administration from ending protections for Haitians right before they were set to expire.
Yeah, which is very good.
Mm-hmm.
Because, they were about to send a ton of ICE agents here to Ohio to start trying to go after these people. This U.S. District Judge Anna Reyes granted a request to pause the termination of temporary protected status for Haitians. Mm-hmm. A lawsuit challenging it proceeds. She wrote here, the termination shall be null, void, and of no legal effect. Yeah, wrote an 83-page opinion that plaintiffs were likely to prevail on the merit of the case, and that she found it substantially likely that Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem preordained her termination decision because of hostility to non-white immigrants. So, yeah. Mm. Good to give these people a little bit of a breather for a little while longer. Mm-hmm. We'll see where this ends up going, but yeah. I'm sure they'll find a way to pull that protections, but not going to be in the near term. So, there you go.
Yeah, so... with that, we're moving from the show proper over to the proper show proper. Our first major story for the night is that the House of Representatives officially approved a $1 trillion spending package to keep the government funded through September. Which means we'll have to go through all this shit again in September.
Yeah. Passed by a vote of 217 to 214. 21 Democrats joining Republicans and supporting. This funds everything but the DHS that is getting a stopgap measure to fund it through the 13th.
Yeah. So
later this week, this next week coming up, is going to be when they're going to figure out limitations and such they're going to place on ICE and all that to get funding for the DHS for the long term.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see where that goes, but yeah, that's going to be a big thing. But yeah, that was just a minor shutdown of things that weren't going to suffer for a few days, so at least they avoid that. But we'll see where this DHS stopgap measure goes.
Yeah. And then, we got news. I'm not sure if this is still on. The Clintons agree to testify in the House's Epstein investigation.
Yeah. They are planning on this. They have not, finalized when they're going to be doing this, or whatever, but yeah, that's just kind of what they're at right now. We'll see where this goes, but yeah, I believe Attorneys for the Clintons have emailed staff for the oversight panel saying the pair would accept Comer's demands to testify. Will appear for deposition on mutually agreeable dates. So they got to go through all that and figure out when they may do that. But yeah, that's kind of where it's at right
now. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. And then this week, a bunch of prosecutors in Paris, France, raided the French offices of Twitter as part of their investigation into Grok's child sexual abuse material that was produced using it.
Yeah, some good news there. They've also summoned Elon Musk for questioning.
Yep.
Yeah, they're facing intensifying scrutiny from Britain's data privacy regulator, which opened formal investigations into how they handled personal data when they developed and deployed Grok. France is also heavily investigating. They opened it in January last year. The prosecutor's cybercrime unit. They're looking into alleged complicity in possessing and spreading pornographic images of minors, sexually explicit deepfakes, denial of crimes against humanity, and manipulation of an automated data processing system as part of an organized group, among other charges. So we'll have to see where that goes, but they're still doing more work here. Yeah, they've asked Musk and former CEO Linda Yaccarino to attend interviews on April 20th. Other employees of X have been summoned the same week. Witnesses, so
yep,
still got more to go for that. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and obviously he's not gonna do anything because he's, you know, he thinks he's above all of this. But anyway, the Supreme Court has announced that they are allowing California to use their new congressional map.
Yeah, not a huge surprise here. Yeah, they released a brief unsigned order on Wednesday. They denied an emergency request by the California's Republican Party to block the redistricting plan. State's GOP argued that the map violated the U.S. Constitution because its creation was mainly driven by race, not partisan politics. A lower federal court also rejected that claim. So that's good news. Virginia's also in the process of redistricting. To which Republicans are complaining about the abuse of power and all that, and it's like, boy, you don't have a leg to stand on, so they need to deal with the mess they've created for everybody. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, that's happening. And then President Trump has announced that he is going to be closing the Kennedy Center for 2 years for construction that starts this July.
Yeah. And claiming that enough performances and such were canceled that they need to shut it down. So, like, as we expected with like the stuff they've been doing with the East Wing of the White House and all that, there's no official documentation of what the plan is for this. So we'll have to see what's going to go into this, but I wouldn't be surprised if he just has it bulldozed and turned it into something else. I don't know.
Because
that's kind of where he wants to be right now. So yeah, there you go.
Yep. So that is just, obviously the Kennedy Center has been, ever since they decided to take it over, it's just been hemorrhaging money. So, you know. Anyway, now we got some science news. NASA has delayed the launch of Artemis 2's lunar mission by at least a month.
Yeah, weather has been pretty bad around there, so they have had to delay it. Also having some other stuff going on, but they're planning a March launch date for four astronauts, three from the U.S., one from Canada, on a 10-day mission to circle the moon and return to Earth. Traveling farther than any humans have ventured into deep space. Issues leading to that delay began about an hour into Monday's test, known as a wet dress rehearsal. The team began fueling the rocket at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Sensors picked up a hydrogen leak. Super-chilled hydrogen is used as fuel for the massive space launch system rocket. So that was also some technical issues causing a delay. So they had troubleshooted the initial leak, but when they began to pressurize the tank, another leak surfaced. So there's some more issues that they're going to keep working on and see if they can get it ready to go next month. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And then we got this this really weird story, and this story is just it's well, you'll see what we mean. One of the hosts of the Today Show, Savannah Guthrie, is dealing with the disappearance of her mother.
Yeah, and it's been a weird thing to see her mother, who I don't know if they have her age here, but she's definitely fairly old and has just disappeared. They don't know if she, 84 years old, she has to have been abducted, most likely. Is still missing as of, today, several, at least a week or two after she disappeared. And of course, idiots are creating, AI generated, messages to, make demands, like they're the kidnappers and all that kind of shit, because people can't be normal. And it's sort of the process of all this, because she's usually one of the people that goes to the Olympics for some of their coverage, had to cancel that, and they've had to send other people out to Milan for that. So, yeah, unfortunate. Hoping that she's okay, but yeah, just kind of a wild situation to have happen
here. Yeah, it's just, it's a terrifying story, and a very odd one at that. But we'll see how that goes. But from there, we're going to go ahead and move on into the entertainment portion of the show, and we got a bunch of those stories this week. First, we found out this week that Bob Iger's replacement as Disney CEO is going to be Josh D'Amaro.
Yeah. This guy,
or D'Amaro. Yep.
Yeah, I would say D'Amaro.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was picked by a unanimous vote from the board. As a Disney veteran who headed the theme park business, will be the new CEO. They also elevated Dana Walden, co-chair of the entertainment division overseeing TV and streaming, for the role of president and chief creative officer.
Yep.
So that's whole thing. So yeah, he'll be in charge by the end of this year, and Bob Iger is ready to leave. So yeah, seems like the company is pretty happy with this choice. So
yeah,
see if that ends up paying off when they are actually in charge and make a decision. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. I hope he manages to do something about the prices at the theme parks, considering he used to run that. But then again. We'll see. We'll see. We will see.
That's why the parks are doing well, because he's
got
the prices right where they need to be.
Yep. And then we got, for those who don't know, the Grammys happened this week. There was a bunch of neat stuff, including a pretty neat performance by Lady Gaga, I thought was pretty cool. But this week, Golden from K-Pop Demon Hunters became the first K-Pop Grammy winner ever in the history of the Grammys.
Yeah, just cool.
Oh yeah,
they had the whole crew out there to celebrate, and yeah, that was the I think one of three or four Emmys they were nominated for. That was the only one they won for best song written for visual media against like three songs from Sinners, among others. I think one was the Nine Inch Nails song for Tron Aries, and the Elton John song from whatever Elton John thing happened last year. So yeah, that's great to see. They continue to do a lot of first for K-pop in a way that's impressive, considering these are all people that were kind of on the outside of the K-pop industry. Looking in. And now got their chance to shine.
And have become one of the most successful. But yeah. And then we also got news that Man on the Inside has been renewed for a third season at Netflix.
Yeah. Great news. First two seasons were very good.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm looking forward to this. More Ted Danson and and crew there. I assume that'll be out probably early next year, based on the cadence they've got for this. But yeah, those are very good shows, season. So happy to see more of that coming.
Yeah. And we also found out that The Singers, which is a live-action short film that was nominated for an Oscar, will be debuting on Netflix February 13th, so next week.
Yeah, so if you want to see one of the Oscar-nominated short films for the Oscars that... when does that happen? That's happening in a few weeks, isn't it, the Oscars? But yeah, that'll be fun to check out one of these. This is... adapted from a 19th century short story by Ivan Turgenev. The Singers unfolds inside a modest pub where a group of downtrodden patrons unexpectedly connect through an impromptu sing-off. The music, which was recorded live on set, becomes the emotional conduit, transforming the room and the people within. That sounds like a pretty good premise there. So, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Does sound like a pretty neat premise. And we also got news that Wicked for Good will be on Peacock March 20th with a sing-along version and a documentary to go along with it.
Yeah, and they're talking about a bunch of bonus content as well coming to it. So, yeah, they have commentary from director John M. Chu, deleted scenes and more. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, kind of going all out on all that stuff. So, yeah, we'll see. I'll probably check that out because I like the first one. Although I think the universal response to this one has been like, the first one is better. Because I think people like the songs that are in the first half of it better than the second half. But otherwise, people still like this one, so curious to see it.
Yeah. And then we got this actually kind of really awesome news. HBO is working on a Baldur's Gate show with Craig Mazin heading it up. And it's supposed to be, from what I've read, it's supposed to be like a pseudo sequel to Baldur's Gate 3, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That seems like what they are planning here. Yeah, as Craig Mazin said here, after putting nearly 1,000 hours into the incredible world of Baldur's Gate 3... It's a dream come true to be able to continue the story that Larian and Wizards of the Coast created. I'm a devoted fan of D&D in the brilliant way that Sven Vicky Pink and his gifted team adapted it. Can't wait to help bring Baldur's Gate and all of its incredible characters to life with as much respect and love as we can. And I'm deeply grateful to Gabe Morano and his team at Hasbro for entrusting me with this incredibly important property. But yeah, they found a new Game of Thrones. Essentially.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, that's happening. I honestly can't wait to see it because it sounds cool. And then we got news that Disney Plus is getting an Aragorn series because that franchise just will not die.
Yeah. They did like a mediocre movie like 20 years ago.
Yeah, somebody, I remember, I think the Nostalgia Critic did like a video on it and he sort of compared it to like one of those things where it was like one of those board games that came with like an accompanying videotape that you had to use because that's how lame it was.
Yeah. So yeah, they have Todd Harthen and Todd Helbing have joined the show as co-showrunners. With Harthen set as co-creator on the show alongside Aragorn author Christopher Paolini. All three will serve as executive producers. So yeah. Kind of they're starting work on this. We'll announce, you know, who they hire and all that for this. So, but yeah, it's basically a bunch of dragons and some humans in there as well. So,
and the plot of Star Wars, like it's very obvious, but whatever. And then we also found out this week that A24 has won the franchise rights for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and they will be working on a series.
Yeah, they're going to work on a TV series. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, A24 does good stuff, so...
Yeah.
So, you know, it, perfect production company to get a hold of it.
Yeah, they're starting with a TV series, but they're also going to work on a film... as well. Glenn Powell's going to be an executive producer on the franchise, so he's getting his money hooks into it.
Yeah.
Which could be interesting.
Could be. Could be.
I feel like it's one of those properties where it's like the first one's great, and then how you sequelize it kind of bad pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
With that kind of stuff. So yeah, I don't know how they're gonna do that, but they definitely tried to do that about like 10 years ago or so. Didn't they try another one of these?
Yeah.
They mentioned they had a sequel in 1986 and another one in 1995. Return of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, aka Texas Chainsaw Massacre The Next Generation, which had Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey in it. So there's also a novel, comic book series, and 3 video games that have been made under the IP. So they try a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, because Leatherface is a very iconic character, weirdly enough. So he's managed to have a lot of staying power. But yeah, so that's happening and kind of neat. And we also got news this week that the original 3 hosts of Mystery Science Theater 3000 are returning to make 4 new episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Most people know that after that show more or less ended and they left it, they started doing riff tracks, which is in and of itself really cool. I love riff tracks. I've got a couple of riff track stuff on my computer that I watch every so often.
And
they're returning to make 4 new episodes. So
yeah, they're doing a Kickstarter for this. Mm-hmm. I don't think they link to it at all.
Well, because they blew past the goal.
Yeah, but I mean, even just finding out what's on there, but it's on the front page of Kickstarter. It should be. They're essentially calling it Riff Tracks Makes MST3K,
mm-hmm.
or what they're also calling it, Mystery Science Theater 3000, the Riff Tracks Experiments.
Mm-hmm.
$20,000 goal. Now it's at $1.6 $1 million, 36 days to go. Their rewards are fairly complicated to try to go through. They have a bunch of stuff here. You can get like a Blu-ray package of these episodes,
mm-hmm.
as well as various others where you're just giving them $10 to do what they do, or start getting some of the stuff here as well as some bonus things from them. Some of their riff track stuff. That's a whole subscription thing they have to it. All the way up to, I think the only ones available still are like $250 is the top one, which gets you commemorative photo taken on sets with Mike, Kevin, and Bill. That's and like all the other stuff with it. There's a lot here, and you can check out if you want to support that or just wait for the episodes to come out. Do all that stuff. A lot to this. But yeah, that seems neat. I don't know that they've announced which episodes they're looking to do. But it's not a huge surprise they are doing this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Considering there's only so much you can do with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like, why don't we get the old guys back in? And it's like, sure. They did their Netflix thing, and that was almost 10 years ago at this point.
Yep.
Might as well find some new avenues here. That's cool.
Yeah. And now we got some trailers. We got an official trailer for The Dinosaurs. It's a documentary hosted by, narrated by Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. This is executive producer Steven Spielberg, Amblin Entertainment, and the team behind Our Planet, doing a documentary series about dinosaurs, the rise and fall of dinosaurs across hundreds of. Seems like it could be pretty cool.
I certainly think so.
That'll be available on Netflix March 6th.
Yeah. I definitely think it looks cool. We also got an official trailer for Rooster, which is a comedy being that stars Steve Carell.
Yeah, for HBO Max. Yeah, where he is playing, I think a teacher at this university whose wife was also a teacher, but he leaves her for a grad student.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody at the school seems to know the shitty thing he did, and now he's kind of the pariah dealing with the aftermath of everything that's going on since then. That looks like that could be pretty fun. That'll be on HBO Max March 8th. So there you go. That looks pretty neat.
Yeah. And last but not least, we got a teaser trailer for Stranger Things Tales from 85. This is a animated spinoff of the Stranger Things franchise, I believe.
Yeah. It's set between, I think, seasons 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
As sort of like an additional adventure thing that happens.
Yeah.
Which introduces like new creatures and such to it. Featuring the original characters, but not the cast. They have new cast voicing them because all those people are older than their characters are in this series. So
yeah,
no point bringing them back. Give some new people some work. So yeah, that looks like it could be neat. It'll be premiering April 23rd. So a couple months from now. So
yeah,
there you go.
Sounds neat. Yeah, so with that, I do believe we've got our show for this week, folks. I do believe we do. We have got our show for this week. So, if you'd like a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, our usual bit of unscripted shenanigans outside of Apple Podcasts can be found at TuneIn, RSS, or basically any kind of podcast aggregator that you can think of. And if we're not there, just, you know, give it a second. We'll show up pretty quickly, at least as soon as we find out about it. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't exist as far as we're concerned. But yeah, so with that, we're going to go ahead and wind everything down here. Thank you, Chris, once again for joining me on this little endeavor. And all those out there who are listening, whether you're someone who's just listening to us for the first time or somebody who has been with us since the very first show all those years ago, please do not hesitate, if you like what you hear, to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everyone in between, because they may hate you, but there's a good 50-50 chance that they'll like us, and that sounds like something that'll benefit everybody. Yeah, we're going to go ahead and end it here. Join us next week when we got a bunch of unscripted shenanigans and other crazy shit to talk about, because it's just 2026. It's still just starting, and we still got freaking 10 plus months to go through. Oh boy. We'll see you next week, folks. Good night.